Twilight Blood, Episode 4, March 16th, 2009. The Lonely Hearts Club.
Your suffering will be legendary, even in hell.
Twilight Blood, news and reviews of everything that goes bump in the night. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Twilight Blood. This is episode 4 for March 16th, 2009. I'm your host, John Moore. Today, we'll take a look at the latest news from the world of horror, literature, and film, listen to some music, and take a look at Brian Keene's latest paperback, Castaways. We'll examine the best horror show on TV, Supernatural, and review A Blast from the Past, the original Night Stalker. Also, I finally got a chance to see Let the Right One In, so we'll take a look at that movie as well. Now, let's sit back, relax, and get started with the news. Nick Cage has signed for Ghost Rider 2. He told MTV it has to have that action horror element and go deeper into that if it were to happen. And it should keep us asking questions, keep it interesting on a philosophical level. If you could see me now, you'd see me doing the jerk-off gesture. Nina Dobrev from Never Cry Werewolf has taken the lead role in the CW's Vampire Diaries. She'll play a young woman caught between quarreling vampire brothers. Scream's Kevin Williamson and Kyle XY's Julie Plec wrote the pilot based on a young adult novel by L.J. Smith. Marco Siega is directing the pilot. Siega's credits include episodes of Dexter and True Blood. In January, Dakota Fanning said that she was in talks to play Jane in the Twilight Saga's New Moon. Now People magazine has confirmed that she is officially on board. The 15-year-old actress is set to star as a sinister vampire. Filming of the Twilight sequel is set to begin in Vancouver later this month, and the movie hits theaters on November 20th, 2009. Chris Columbus's 1492 Entertainment purchased the rights to the graphic novel Welcome to Hawksford. Hawksford concerns a psychiatrist who must team with a deeply disturbed patient in order to escape werewolves who run an institution for the criminally insane.
Werewolf!
Werewolf?
There! What? There, wolf. There, castle.
Why are you talking that way?
I thought you wanted to.
Stuart Gordon admitted to confusion over the news of a Reanimator remake. Gordon says, I contacted Brian, and he didn't know anything about it. I said, what's going on with the remake? And he asked, what remake? Brian is Brian Usna, the producer of the film. The Pang brothers are working on a sequel to The Eye called The Child's Eye. A trailer for Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell will hit the screens with The Last House on the Left remake. The Saturn Award nominations are in. Took a look. Not too exciting. Take a look online. You can see what they are. I'm pretty disappointed in the movies they nominated for Best Horror Film. You can rent or buy Let the Right One In from Amazon as a download. That's pretty cool. Here's what's coming on DVD this week. Dark Reprieve, Faust, The Haunted Castle, Lost Souls, Murnau, which is a 6-disc set including Faust, The Haunted Castle, and Nosferatu, and a documentary from A&E called The New Vampire Secrets, and then a special edition of Walled In. And now I think it's time to listen to some music. Let's listen to some Cakey Face as they play Wolfman.
Wolfman, Wolfman.
A little while ago, we talked about a movie called The Norlis Tapes, which was produced by a man named Dan Curtis. And I mentioned then that we'd talk about some of Dan Curtis's other work. Dan Curtis was the man who saved horror in the 1970s. And he did that with a TV show, a soap opera actually called Dark Shadows. And then he continued with a made-for-television movie that was called The Night Stalker. It aired on ABC in 1972, and it starred Darren McGavin as Carl Kolchak. When the film opens up, Kolchak is sitting on the bed of a sleazy hotel room, and he's talking into a portable tape recorder about a story that he had written and how it had been withheld by the authorities. He describes a series of murders that plagued the Las Vegas Strip. All of the victims were young women that had their blood drained. And during this time, the blood banks are also being robbed by a tall, thin man who is tremendously powerful. Kolchak discovers the killer is a vampire. And his boss, Tony Vincenzo, doesn't like that very much. Carl is also hanging out with his girlfriend, a lady named Gail Foster, who earns her living as a dancer in the nightclub where the first murder victim worked. Carl tries to talk her into giving up her night job, but he doesn't really do anything to support her, and so she continues to work as a dancer. There is a scene where the vampire, or the killer at this point, because we don't really know he's a vampire yet, breaks into a blood bank in a hospital and wreaks havoc as he escapes with the blood that he wanted. The police show up, shoot at him point blank, and he gets away. Well, all this leads Kolchak to decide that the killer actually is a real vampire. And he's able to convince the police that that's the case. And he gets them to start carrying crosses and stakes and those type of things. Ultimately, though, Kolchak is the person who ends up taking the vampire down. And he does it in front of a friend of his who is an FBI agent. It's a pretty exciting ending. Kolchak is in the vampire's lair. The vampire is monstrous. Imagine Christopher Lee as in Dracula, Prince of Darkness, the vampire who doesn't talk, who is very animalistic, very violent. And Kolchak faces him down. They have a fight, and Kolchak rips down some covering over the windows and lets the sun in, traps the vampire in a corner, and drives a stake through his heart. So Kolchak writes the story up, and he's convinced that he's in pretty good shape. It ends up, though, that he's not. The authorities in Las Vegas decide that they will charge Kolchak with murder if he publishes the vampire story, and they run his girlfriend out of town. So he loses his girlfriend, he loses his job, he can't live where he's been living anymore. So the end of the series, or the end of the movie, does not end well for Kolchak, even though he's defeated the monster. The Night Stalker is quite possibly one of the best vampire movies ever made. It works very well. The Las Vegas locations are excellent, and you can really believe that Las Vegas, the 24-hour city, is a place where there could be a vampire. Just an outstanding movie. Darren McGavin plays Kolchak and does an excellent job. He's totally believable as a somewhat down-on-his-luck reporter who's moved from town to town, always having problems with authority, ending up losing his job, and ends up finding the story of his life in Las Vegas, and then having the rug pulled out from underneath him, and his life destroyed again. This is probably Darren McGavin's best role. this is the best he did. He was good as the father in A Christmas Story as well, but this is probably the role that he will always be remembered for, between The Night Stalker and his sequel, The Night Strangler, and then the Kolchak television series that followed. Barry Atwater plays the vampire, and although I've seen some criticism of him playing the vampire as animalistic, I think it's outstanding. I mean, this is really the way a vampire would look. This is not the romantic vampire of Dark Shadows or the Anne Rice novels. This is the European vampire as a monster, a creature that is there to eat you. And that's all he wants. He doesn't want to be your friend. He doesn't want to be your lover. He wants to eat you. Claude Akins does a good job as the Las Vegas County Sheriff. He's in opposition to Kolchak and doesn't like him. And in the end, he's the person who destroys Kolchak. Does a good job. And also, Carol Lynley, who was a blonde TV star in the 70s, is just absolutely radiant as Kolchak's girlfriend. She's just beautiful. And she plays the part well. It's not a big part, but she does a good job with it. It makes you wish that she would have been in some of the subsequent Kolchak stories, the Night Strangler or the Night Stalker TV series. This was one of Dan Curtis's productions. It was probably his first big production after Dark Shadows ended. Then he followed it with The Night Strangler. Now, with The Night Stalker, he didn't direct the film. He brought in a director from England who had been working on Hammer films. And that may be part of the reason why it works so well as well, is because with having a guy who had worked at Hammer, it was somebody who understood the horror film and knew how to make good horror movies. If you compare this to Hammer's Dracula AD 1972, which was Hammer trying to modernize the vampire legend, you really see how Hammer was falling apart in this, as far as making horror movies. This is a far superior movie to Dracula AD 1972. It's just way better. Dan Curtis, maybe because of the time he had spent working on Dark Shadows, knew how to make a horror story. And really, we should consider Dan Curtis as being one of the heroes of the modern horror film because of the work that he did in the 1970s. I think that maybe in the future we'll do a special on Dan Curtis and his life and talk about all the movies that he made, just because it was so extraordinary what this man did. He really, like I said, is the person who saved the horror movie and the classical monster movie in the 1970s. I saw this movie on a DVD that had The Night Strangler along with it, so we'll cover The Night Strangler sometime in the future as well. It's a beautiful DVD. The transfer is excellent. The colors are rich. Everything is real crisp and clear. For special features, there's an interview with Dan Curtis, and that's interesting. One of the few interviews with Dan Curtis that I know about. Just really an excellent DVD. I suggest you check it out. I got it from Netflix. I'm sure that you could buy it from Amazon as well. Highly recommended. One of the best horror movies that have ever been made. You definitely, if you have not seen The Night Stalker, now's the time to see it. I've been watching season one of Supernatural on DVD, and I've been pleasantly surprised to find it's the best horror show on TV. Supernatural is the story of the Winchester brothers, Sam and Dean, and their fight against the forces of evil. The two brothers travel across the country in their black muscle car, listening to classic rock and fighting all types of monsters. including monsters from urban legends, European folklore, as well as some very human monsters. Jared Padalecki plays Sam, and Jensen Ackles plays Dean. I've heard complaints about the two pretty boy actors, but really, what can you expect from network TV? The characters are likable and engaging, and the actors do a good job selling the premise of the show. The chemistry between the two actors is excellent, and the supporting cast is every bit as good. Each episode unfolds as a mini horror movie. The Winchester brothers travel around the country looking for their father. They may encounter Bloody Mary, or the Hook Man, or possibly a vampire. Not every episode is gold, but most of the episodes are superior to what we've seen on other horror TV shows, including Showtime's Masters of Horror. Supernatural avoids what I call the Kolchak factor. What is the Kolchak factor, you ask? It's the problem you have when the characters encounter the supernatural so often that viewers suspend their suspension of disbelief. They quit buying the show. This was the problem that ruined the old TV show, Kolchak, The Night Stalker. Supernatural avoids this problem by having the heroes actively seeking monsters. Our heroes have very real, good reasons for doing what they do. They are part of a demon-fighting family. They are seeking revenge for the death of their mother. They want to find and protect their father. And finally, they are looking out for each other. Supernatural is good, scary fun. Check it out. Castaways is the latest novel from Brian Keene. It was published by Leisure Books, and you can pick it up online at Amazon and practically anywhere books are sold. I'm sure we've all seen Survivor, the TV game show that strands several stereotypical people in the wilderness. Imagine a world where the cast of Survivor is stranded on a small island with subhuman creatures who are hungry and horny, and you have an idea of what goes on in Brian Keene's Castaways. Castaways is a tribute to and was influenced by the late Richard Layman, and there are a lot of Layman-esque things going on here. The bestial inhabitants of the island recall Layman's creations from the Beast House series. The characters react to the situation they find themselves in ways that I can see Layman's characters behaving. This is not 100% positive, since the male characters become turned on by minor things like boobs at really inappropriate times. I don't know about you, but if I'm ever kidnapped by orangutans who plan on eating me, I doubt if seeing the boobs of another captive is going to turn me on. Brian Keene is a great writer. I may get in trouble for saying this, but he's a better writer than Richard Layman was. So even though I enjoyed Castaways, I couldn't say that it's Keene's best work. Still, it's a fast read, and there is a lot on the shelves that's far worse than Castaways. I recommend that you grab it for a fast, fun read while you wait for Keene's next book, Urban Gothic, which looks to be a more substantial offering. Here's the B-Movie Brits with Zombie TV Live.
I'm gonna fuck you and your mind. I won't be gone.
hate them, vampires dominate horror films and literature. Take a look at Netflix and you'll see 8 pages of vampire movies. Dracula has been featured in more movies than any other character, with the possible exception of Sherlock Holmes. Every generation revisits the European vampire legend and reinterprets it. The latest version of the vampire story that resonates is Let the Right One In, a Swedish film. Directed by Tomas Alfredson and based on the novel by John Lindquist, Let the Right One In is a new and original take on the classic vampire tale, with echoes from earlier vampire tales, like Lefanu's Carmilla. Oscar is a meek 12-year-old boy living near Stockholm in the early 1980s. He's bullied by his classmates, and he spends his evenings imagining his revenge, practicing knife attacks in the courtyard of his apartment complex. There, he meets Ellie, who appears to be a 12-year-old girl. Ellie recently moved in next door to Oscar with an older man named Håkan. Over time, Ellie and Oscar share their existence through playing, and they begin to exchange Morse code messages through the apartment wall. Ellie eventually learns about Oscar's problems at school and encourages him to stand up for himself. When Oscar is confronted by his main nemesis, Connie, Oscar hits Connie in the ear with a pole, causing him to fall to his knees, sobbing. In the meantime, Håkan is stalking and killing the local residents, seeking to drain and collect their blood to provide sustenance for Ellie. But he blows it every time. When Håkan is about to be discovered, he pours acid on his face in order to prevent the authorities from identifying him. Ellie visits the hospital where Håkan is, flies up to his window. Håkan opens the window and offers his neck to her. And she kills him. She drinks his blood, then he falls out the window. At this point, Ellie agrees to go steady with Oscar. And eventually Oscar offers her a blood brothership or sistership or something by cutting his hand and trying to persuade her to mix her blood with his. Ellie falls down on the floor and begins to drink Oscar's blood from the ground and tells him to leave. Right after that, Ellie goes out and she attacks a local woman named Virginia. And then Virginia's boyfriend, who's named Lack, stops the attack. And at this point, things start to come apart for both Ellie and Oscar, as Virginia's boyfriend stalks Ellie and Connie's older brother comes after Oscar. All the issues are resolved in a climactic scene that leaves the viewer gasping. This is a rare modern horror movie that leaves you thinking after the movie is over. It resonates on so many levels and leaves the viewer with so many questions. The story is resolved, but not everything is handed to you on a silver platter. It's up to you to decide what all the clues mean. Wikipedia calls Let the Right One In a romantic vampire story. But I think that misses the real point of Let the Right One In. Oscar falls in love with Ellie, but I'm not sure about Ellie's motives. And wherever their relationship goes after the end of the movie, it's not going to be a good thing. Kerr Hedebron plays Oscar, and Lena Lee Anderson plays Ellie. Let the Right One In is a genre-changing movie. You have to see it. You can get it on DVD now or download it from Amazon's movie store. Don't miss it. It's a classic.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
Our songs for this episode were provided by the PodSafe Network at music.podshow.com. Our featured songs were Wolfman from Cakey Face, who you can find at www.cakeyface.com, and Zombie TV Live by the B-Movie Brits. And you can find them at myspace.com/B-Movie Brits. And, of course, our closing song is Horror Movie by The Kits. And you can find The Kits at myspace.com/The Kits. Want to let Twilight Blood know what you think of the show? Contact us by commenting on the site at twilightblood.com. email us at twilightbloodpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave us a voicemail at 719-285-4718. That's it for this episode of Twilight Blood. Join us next week for a review of Brian Smith's novel Soul Taker, the movie Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter, and more news that goes bump in the night. Thanks for joining us and giving us some of your time. This is John Moore for Twilight Blood saying, happy trails to you.